Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Welcome to a special edition of the Friday Filibuster, and you can define special any way you see fit, because my my special co-hosts here are pinch-hitting for our regulars. Mac McIntyre is enjoying The Goonies on the big screen.
Fantastic.
Yeah, screening somewhere in Massachusetts, so obviously he couldn't make it. And our other regulars aren't available, so we're going to bring in the irregulars, but voices that I'm sure that you've heard before in your dreams. Steve Power. Welcome.
Hey, you guys.
And Dan Mancini.
Hey.
So we were actually just we were talking to Steve. Steve's video store business saw a boost in activity when the Blockbuster across the street from him unfortunately closed down. And we were saying how he's feasting on the corpse of of another video store. Well, I'm kind of feasting on the corpses of a couple other podcasts by bringing these guys in. So Dan, who is a contrarian a-hole on our Objection podcast that we do, and Steve, who does the Blast Processing video game podcast for the site. So
rather poorly, I might add.
I didn't want to say it, but no. So anyway, it is an all-star.
Staley thought he canceled us last year.
Never. He'll never do that. You're the cash cow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you're half right. Oh, yeah, half that. You're half that. So Steve, Dan, myself, we're going to kill some time for you for this weekend. And I guess we'll get right to it. Steve, I know you just got off a huge shift, so I'm going to take advantage of your consciousness while we have it.
Okay.
Why don't you talk a little bit about have you caught any movies in the theater or anything entertainment-wise in your orbit that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, well, I've been busy. I've been working a lot. So I've been punching about 65-hour weeks.
Nice.
So I haven't had a whole lot of time for movie watching, but I did get some theater stuff in. I did check out Fast Five.
I am interested in hearing that. As someone who didn't hate like the last Fast and the Furious and was kind of ambivalent on the other ones, what did you think of Fast Five?
I had a ball. I really had a lot of fun, actually. And now I haven't seen – I didn't see Tokyo Drift, and I didn't see Fast and Furious or whatever. These movies are completely foreign to me. I did see the original, and after I watched the second one where you know, the Miami-Dade Police Department was using EMP claw-launching bazookas, I kind of checked out.
Yeah, I missed that one. I missed Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah,
but I saw one, and then I saw Tokyo Drift, which is lame, and then the last one, which I thought was pretty cool – mainly because I guess Michelle Rodriguez's character dies in it, so that was kind of cool. And then the fifth one, I heard was gonzo fun actually.
It's definitely like that. The series has completely metamorphosized into
go with it.
into an action franchise. It is not a car film anymore.
Okay.
In fact, the only scene in the film that deals with like underground street racing, they actually cut away from the race before it starts.
I mean, how many slow motion shots of like dudes peering over their hoods and girls like gyrating to some kind of techno, you know,
and getting really get away with traveling at ridiculous speeds while playing with a laptop in the passenger seat.
You know? Yeah. I love those movies. You know, they race for like, you know, they talk about like 10-second cars, right? You have a 10-second car.
Yeah,
so, but
yeah.
The races are always like 2 minutes,
5 minutes. They drive so fast that like they enter a warp in time and space.
That's right. They've gone.
This is what it is. Yeah, they've gone to play it. But no, it's, you know, I always wondered how they could clutch, shift, you know, hit Facebook and Twitter.
That's right.
Adjust their fuel oxidization mix, you know, and still keep their eyes on the road. It's pretty impressive. These guys are slick drivers.
So how was The Rock? I heard he was pretty cool in that because he's kind of been disgraceful in the last bunch of movies, and I always kind of liked him. How was he? I heard he's got a return more to a badass action type in that movie.
He glowers a lot, you know. He frowns a lot. He punches dudes. You know, he does what's expected of him. His neck is still bigger than his head, so that's pretty cool. He was fun, and the fight between he and Vin was exactly what I wanted to see. You know, it wasn't some big technical, you know, MMA showpiece or wrestling show. It was two of them just chucking meat slabs through walls. You know, it was brutal. It was knockdown, drag out fun, you know. But the action in it was great. It was just, you know, it reminded me a lot of some of the stuff from last year. You know, like it gave off the same kind of vibe as, say, The Losers or The Expendables. You know, it just had that that cool, just all-out action vibe. You know, it wasn't... I don't know if it's that they dumped everything that happened previous to Fast and Furious or not, but it's just it didn't feel like the other films in the series. Well, I can't vouch for Fast and Furious because I haven't seen it. But, you know, it didn't feel like the first two or three movies. You know, there was no...
Right, like that last one, Fast and Furious, was definitely less underground racing and more action movie with cars.
Yeah, yeah, and this one was like, you know, part action movie, part heist movie. It was. I was really pleased with it. You know, it was intelligently done. It was for what it was. I mean, you know, for a PG-13, just summer action flick, it was intelligently handled. The heist plot was pretty cool. It was enjoyable. I just had a lot of fun with it.
Well, I know I'm going to speak for Dan here because we kind of carry this torch on the other podcast. But was the action practical, you know, or was there a lot of CGI stuff used in it?
No, it was pretty, from what I noticed, and I mean, either this is a testament to how good, was it Lee?
Justin Lin?
Justin Lin, yeah. It's either a testament to how good he's gotten as a director, or just the fact that they actually did do all practical, but I didn't notice very much in the way of CG. I mean, the best special effect in the movie was having two 2010 Dodge Chargers pull a 10-ton bank vault.
Yeah, I heard that was kind of the center.
You know, that was kind of unrealistic, but a friend of mine assures me that if those Dodge Chargers had their chassis reinforced and were 6 liters with all-wheel drive, then yes, they could have pulled that safe. So, you know, okay, whatever. But it was a lot of fun. Nice. It was a good, you know, no complaints, no eye-rolling, oh, come on, you've got to be kidding me moments, you know, and it really played to that whole 80s, the masculine action movie, you know, that you were
singing,
always,
you're singing our song here, right?
You know, yeah. you know what we are, you know, when the inevitable comes up and, you know, the guys are all planning their big final move and then you just hear The Rock off screen, I'll ride with you, Toretto. And it's like, oh yeah, here we go. You know, this shit just got real.
All right.
But it was good. It was fun.
Very good.
And I also checked out Thor, but, you know, it was good, but the lingering memory hasn't been overly strong.
I think, yeah, I forgot I actually saw it. All right, well.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Dan, how about you? What have you been occupying yourself with recently? Between, I always see your forlorn Facebook updates about watching the Cubs, so I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into that. So, is there anything else you've been able to get your mind away from things?
Yeah, that is pretty brutal. Well, the only thing I've seen in the theater was taking the kids to see Kung Fu Panda 2.
And?
Which probably doesn't stack up against Fast Five. But, no, if you like the first one, you'll like the second one. If you hated the first one, you'll hate the second one. It did have more action than the first one. And I'm sort of like middle of the road on the first one. Mm-hmm. Like when the kids are watching it, I don't have to leave the room. Kind of thing. Beautifully animated, some really nice action through the first two acts, and you don't really get the kind of sappy moral of the story type thing till the end. And it's about as deep as the originals. But not bad, you know.
Did you guys see it in 3D?
No.
Okay, so you didn't spend the $95 to watch it in 3D?
No, yeah, that was the frightening thing. It was my daughter's first time in the theater.
That'd be too much, probably.
Yeah, she'll be three, so there's no way she was going to do the 3D. But I think it would have been, I can't remember because we had a gift card, but I think if we had not had a gift card just for, you know, not counting popcorn and stuff, just to get in, I think it would have been about $35. Just for 2D.
Crazy. Craziness.
Yeah, more than you could buy a good Blu-ray for that. Is it any wonder that the theater business is collapsing?
Man, I know. We went to see Thor. I was shocked by how much the bottom line turned out to be. I mean, it's like they jacked up prices overnight, it seemed. So.
Yeah. I took my son to see that, and we did see that in 3D, and I think it was $28 for the two of us.
Wow. Well, that's me being curmudgeonly.
That's one child price. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this too, Dan. We touched upon our last podcast, but this is a good opportunity. How about this season of Parks and Recreation, a favorite show of ours, and it just wrapped up its finale recently. So you want to give a give your take on that season?
Yeah, because I think most of our discussion of that was offline, wasn't it?
So, I think so. We talked a lot. Yeah. So
yeah, one of the things we discussed was just the fantastic semi-reveal of Tammy One at end of the season's last episode. Ron Swanson's first wife, who is apparently so horrifying that she causes his horrifying second wife to immediately flee upon hearing that she's in the area. So that to me was like one of the best season-ending cliffhangers.
Totally outshone like Leslie's cliffhanger by a mile.
Right. You know? Right. Because Tammy too is fantastic. We talked about that and how great she was at the end of this last season episode where, you know, Ron asks her if she's going to take the number 13 back to Satan's butthole. And you know, they trade some good insults, and she's always fantastic in that role and insults Tom and, you know, everything else. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good wrap up.
The two episodes back to back were excellent and, you know, very Swanson-rific too. And Jean-Ralphio made, you know, strong appearances.
Very good Jean-Ralphio stuff. A little bit of Detlef Schrempf. Never heard anything.
That's right.
I will say this: the one thing I'm a little bit worried about is that they're going to take this Leslie and Ben secret romance thing and just drive it into the ground.
That's possible.
To death. And you know, she's running for mayor or whatever she's going to run for. I guess it won't be mayor. Maybe it'll be something else. Or was it mayor?
Yeah, it's a possibility. Parks and Rec is a full blown ensemble comedy to me. So that would be surprising if they dumped all the resources into that one plot line.
Yeah. But I can see them using the whole her running for some sort of office as an additional excuse to hide the relationship and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that kind of thing gets old really fast. Just, you know, either put them together or not, but don't drag it out for, you know, three seasons.
Now, Steve, did you ever see this show? Is it in your wheelhouse at all?
I haven't had cable since 1998.
Okay. Well, you can stream it on Netflix if you guys...
I don't know if it's on Netflix Canada or not, but I'll take a look. I'll definitely
Netflix
check it out.
Netflix Canada, interesting.
I've been watching Community reruns. I went back and started watching season one of Community.
That's good stuff. That gives a lot of shout-outs to geekdom right there.
I've been really enjoying it, yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I think Parks and Rec would be great.
Yeah, you will immediately fall in love with Ron Swanson. Just be one that
kind of
show. Yeah.
Now, everybody told me I'd love Big Bang Theory, too, and I absolutely despise that show with every fiber of my being.
I did not watch that. The CBS sitcoms don't really do much for me, to tell you the truth. So
there's not a single likable character in it. Like, they basically – it feels like a show for geeks written by people who hate geeks.
Oh, nice.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah. I've read some – yeah. It's amazing how writers TV writers seem to just completely loathe the idea of geeks and techs and video gamers. And
They just don't understand them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because they're too busy writing TV shows. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Real geeks are too lazy to write TV shows.
Well, Parks and Rec is on Netflix here, so you should just give it a whirl and see if you can track it down.
Yeah, I'll take a search for it, see if I can...
And it has nothing but likable characters.
That's true. That's different. That's why it's different from so many other shows. Everyone is likable.
Yeah, I don't even mind when you throw like a likable asshole in there, but
Jean-Ralphio is.
Jean-Ralphio is. He's like the biggest douchebag on television, but he's
okay.
But you can't help but like the guy.
Can't help but like him. and words can't describe that. So yeah, that's I guarantee you that you'll be a Ron Swanson-ophile after watching that. So
I'll take a look.
Nice. Let's see. In my end, actually. Tomorrow, I'll probably end up going to see the X-Men movie.
Nice.
Heard good things about it. Looks intriguing to me. I like the period piece of it all. I mean, I was never a big X-Men guy. I didn't even really like the movies that much. But we'll see. I like the look and feel of this one. So, I mean, I know that's not really any kind of review, but it's rare that I try to get out, you know, of the theaters. But I
think I'm going to wait. I've heard nothing but good things about it, but I am still incredibly skeptical about it just because it's X-Men and because, frankly, I hate the movie Kick-Ass.
No, well, I heard
every fiber of my being.
I heard it's totally different.
I'm right there.
And so there's all these people saying, oh, man, it's fantastic. But they're the same people who thought Kick-Ass was fantastic. And so I just don't know if
I've heard it's totally, totally different. You know, absolutely, I read it totally different, absolutely different. So,
and it looks great.
Yeah, but, I like the cast. Michael Fassbender is in this. He was a guy from Centurion, right,
awesome.
Steve? Right? Remember
we
got Centurion Love, and he was a badass there, and he's a badass in 300. So it's always good to see these guys kind of embrace the badassness on screen. You watch them grow like your own child, you know, and then piss you off and break your heart like Tony Jaa did. So.
I did read one review that really appealed to me. They said basically that the first half of the film pretty much exclusively deals with Fassbender searching for the head of
Nazi hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's basically it plays out like a 60s spy film with superpowers.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
that sounds awesome to me.
I heard it was violent as well, so I'm on board with that. So.
Yeah. See, the other problem I have with movies like this and trying to figure out if I want to see it is that you read the reviews of it, and so many critics are just moron parrots, you know? Like, every review talks about, like, Matthew Vaughn comes out and says, man, I love James Bond. I always wanted to review direct a James Bond movie, and, you know, this was kind of my chance to do something in that period and everything. And then every review talks about how, it's like a James Bond movie.
Yeah,
Michael Fassbender really inventive.
James Bond with mutant powers.
Yeah, that's right. I have seen that over and over again.
Observant.
Yeah.
I have seen that repeated ad nauseum. So
you're such a bunch of goddamn talking monkeys.
It's like the.
Speaking of which, the Rise of the Planet Apes trailer just launched. Did you see that?
I did not.
That is a movie I wasn't even expecting nor anticipating. No, didn't realize there was a call for. But hey, whatever.
Yeah, I saw a teaser for it.
Yeah, James Franco is a genetic scientist. I mean, that's like Denise Richards is a nuclear physicist.
Come on now. Isn't that a little harsh to poor Mr. Franco?
I guess so. You're right.
Well, it looks better than the Burton reboot.
Let's never speak of that again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it looks like, I don't know if it's any good as a Planet of the Apes movie, although I'm not sure that as much as I love the original Planet of the Apes, that there's that much of a thing as a good Planet of the Apes movie. It's kind of like believing in unicorns, but you know, it looks like maybe it could be a decent horror movie.
Yeah, I don't know.
The CGI doesn't suck. That's good.
It looks like an action / message movie. Like the latest trailer was like action, then you know a lot of the nuanced stuff. Like they're only
the dangers of genetic tampering,
or racism, or something like that.
Oh god,
people suck.
Like a failed. Yeah.
People suck so much that apes should kill them.
That's right.
Here we go.
We deserve it. We deserve to be ripped to shred by apes.
That's right. Homo sapien guilt. I think that's what it comes down to. Well, enough talking about that. So, yeah, we'll see how X-Men is. I actually am kind of looking forward to it. So, we shall see. And then last thing I did want to bring up real quick since, Steve, I got you on here.
Sure.
Conan, what do you think?
I can't freaking wait.
I know you are a huge fan. I am too. You know, I don't know anything about the movie. It seems to be really under the radar to me right now. You know, I mean, a trailer came out, which is pretty cool. It didn't really blow my skirt up. I mean, I will go see him anytime there's swords and decapitations and R-rated barbarian moves. I'm in. So I have no idea what to expect. You know, so
well, I know the art design, like a lot of the set design, costume designs and stuff were carried over from the Age of Conan video game, and they actually got a lot of the developers, the art designers and stuff from that involved in the production of the movie. So the look of it, I thought was just something really unique, like really, really
cool.
Imaginative, you know?
It did, yes.
And the
fact that looked fantasy. There was some fantasy. It did, you know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And there was an interview with the screenplayer, like the writer of the screenplay, where he addresses the deviations from Howard's source material and all that. And like, I'm a huge Robert E. Howard fan. Like, I've read pretty much every word that this guy has typed, you know? So, and to see stuff in the trailers that really harkens back to Howard's original writing, like they took the teaser trailer, which itself wasn't completely overwhelming because of that stupid narration.
Right,
but then
right.
They had the line from Queen of the Black Coast. They had the, I live, I love, I slay, and I am content. My my geek hormones went into overdrive when I heard that. I was just like, oh yeah, you know, bring it on. I got very, very excited.
What do you think of Momoa there as Conan?
I think he sells it fantastically.
And you know what? I will say this. My anticipation jumped up a little bit because he's in Game of Thrones, the HBO
and
series.
Game of Thrones was his audition for Conan. Apparently the Conan producers saw the pilot for Game of Thrones and just basically walked up and said, hey, you want to be Conan?
Because that's been a series we've been watching and really enjoying.
It is. I mean, from someone who absolutely hated the novel, the series is pretty fantastic.
All right, cool. Interesting. Yeah, so obviously there was this last episode was a huge one, and Momoa really steps up as a, you know, and like he delivers this really crazy speech at the end. And it's like, wow, I could see this dude bringing some of that juice to Conan. So just him in that role boosted my anticipation for the film.
Well, I mean, Stephen Lang, just in that full-length trailer when you hear Lang, you know, behold in despair, like he seems to be going all out, you know? And
Stephen Lang going all out.
No. Yeah, he really seems to be chewing the scenery like nobody's business, which I'm all for. I'm totally behind that. And Momoa kind of, like, I know every single news item you see on the internet, and I mean, you know, you never listen, you never read comment sections. You should never ever go to a site like joblow.com and read the comment sections under a news story because it causes brain damage. It causes like bleeding internally in the skull, you know, so you shouldn't do it. But of course, every single news story I see, it just infuriates me because one of the first comments I see is like, he's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like, I got news for you, man. Arnold Schwarzenegger is not Conan.
Right,
he never was Conan. If you've ever read...
And I've read one Conan book, actually.
Yeah, so. See, there you go.
I'm proud of that.
He brings that intelligence to it. He brings that kind of... Like, Conan was not a stupid guy. Conan was a pretty intelligent, you know, he wasn't civilized. But he had that civilized intelligence about him. And Momoa really seems to be catching that. You know, he really seems to be going after that original character rather than, you know, the Hollywood Schwarzenegger version of the character, which is not at all true to the source material, you know?
All right, cool. Well, we'll see. I mean, Marcus Nispel is directing it. He directed Pathfinder, which on paper sounded like it'd be incredibly awesome. But it was just such a dark movie, I couldn't even see what was happening on screen.
I loved Pathfinder.
I mean, it was I had no idea what was that because it was just so dark. So,
did you watch it on Blu-ray or DVD, or did you see it in theater?
DVD.
Okay, I watched it on Blu-ray. Like, the first time I saw it was on Blu-ray, and I was really pleased with it.
Yeah, we'll see. It's hard to the right place, so I'll give them that benefit. So we'll see.
Yeah, and it looks like it has some of those fantasy elements.
It does,
you know, they really could do in the early 80s that are so much part of Howard's stuff. And, you know, I really hope that it's successful enough that they make another one and we can see Conan as a buccaneer.
Apparently, there's a little of that in this one.
Those were always some of my favorite stories, is when he's just sailing around, getting off on some weird island. You know, some weird crap goes down with, you know, a priest or something, or some bizarre religious cult, and then he just has to slaughter everybody and, you know, fix some kind of problem and then get out. Those are just awesome.
You left out Make Love to a Woman.
Well, yeah.
That's in there, too.
To a woman that they're probably going to sacrifice.
Yeah, you know, usually.
You know.
And that would be... Apparently there is a pirate part in that. Like, apparently there is a section of this where he is, you know, on the high seas kind of thing, so.
Very nice. Very nice.
All
I mean, the only thing they could do that would be better, and you would never get the funding for a movie like this, is have some kind of big, you know, bloated three-hour thing where, because really the great thing about what Howard did in creating the character is that he basically created three different versions of Conan simultaneously. So you have like 19-year-old, the guy who's in his early to mid 30s, who's in his prime, and then the old man who's, you know, a king and is very powerful, but is sort of past his physical prime. And if you could, you know, and he purposely wrote the stories out of order because that's how you would tell stories if it was a, you know, oral tradition, you wouldn't tell them in chronological order. And if you could somehow do that in a movie, but I think you'd probably have to be Peter Jackson to get the budget to do something like that. But
that would be awesome. My dream would be for someone to look at what Dark Horse has been doing with Conan since about 2003 in the comic books. Like, they took writer Kurt Busiek, who's pretty highly acclaimed in the comic book world. He took like the official, the closest to canon Howard timeline. And he basically filled in all the gaps in between. And so they're adapting Howard's stories, but then they're also filling in, okay, in this story, he's in Turin. How did he get here? you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And they're filling in all the chronological gaps. And the books have been absolutely phenomenal. Like, I've been devouring them as the trades come out. It's up to, I think, about volume 10 now. And my dream would be to, you know, to take a TV series even, you know, like, say, like a HBO or Stars or whatever, and do it as a TV series and go in that route, you know, like follow those books, because they are such a fantastic read.
Very nice. Well,
yeah, they're entertaining.
Fingers crossed. Maybe it'll be. And it looks like it might get the R rating, just judging from some.
It is an R rated. Yeah, it's confirmed to be R rated. Yep.
All right.
I read an interview with Nispel, and they asked him, you know, is it going to be R or PG-13? And it's like, well, they hired me. I only know how to make R rated movies.
All right, there you go. But we'll see if it could face the monumental task of eradicating the stench of Conan the Destroyer from everyone's pop culture memory. We shall see.
I kind of like Conan.
Stop. Stop now before we can stop this right now.
Man, I was like 8 when I saw it, okay?
There you go. That works then. Beyond that.
Abomination.
It's not as bad as Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
You mean the one where the star spanks the prince? Come on.
Yeah. You've been a bad boy.
My experience of Conan the Destroyer is that was in the days before the internet, when they could sneak a really crappy movie onto you.
That's right.
You know, and you could walk in completely expecting something like Conan the Barbarian and then get hit with the Destroyer. and not have any clue that this was going to happen, because there were no movie websites to warn you.
Yeah, that's right. None of
how horrible the experience was going to be.
The days of the Nut Punch movie are gone, I think, you know?
Yeah.
You don't know what's coming, and then bam, right to the testicles. Oh, all right, let's move on to just talk about stuff maybe we're working for on the site. Steve, you got anything in the cooker you want to give a shout out towards?
I did have 3 or 4 reviews all set to go, and my computer melted down and exploded.
Oh.
So that was not a fun time, but I did, for some reason or another, we got Zombieland on Blu-ray.
Nice.
And really? I've been like going back through that one, and I mean I'd seen it when it originally came out and stuff, but I hadn't really watched the special features on the disc or anything, which was all, you know, pretty fun. And I remember originally a lot of people kind of compared it, or sorry, I should say contrasted it to Shaun of the Dead. You know, everybody was like, no, this is not Shaun of the Dead. It's a very different movie, and yada, 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 yada. When I went back and watched it again, you know, it is kind of a lot like Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really does have, you know, that like that almost like the romantic comedy undertone, or at least the romantic road movie. And like the humor, like the way they play up the zombie attack, they do play it pretty straight. They do take it pretty seriously and stuff. So, you know, it is really kind of an Americanized version of Shaun of the Dead in many ways.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie a good deal.
It was a lot of fun going back, because, I mean, I hadn't seen it in a year, so it was a lot of fun going back to it and stuff. I really had a ball. And, of course, Woody Harrelson's absolutely fantastic.
He's great. Legendary.
Yeah.
Nice. Dan?
Well, let's see. What did I recently had Terminator, which I knew was going to be a crappy Blu-ray, going in, because I had heard that it was just a repackage. But, you know, it was an opportunity.
Is it a book?
A Terminator.
The Blu-ray book?
They just took the old Blu-ray, which I think was originally released in 2006, and put it in a book, you know, with some glossy.
Nice.
So it's the exact same disc, you know. Lame, but, you know, you get to write about the Terminator. Come on.
Yep.
Right now I'm working on Battle Los Angeles.
Nice.
So I did watch it. Did enjoy it.
All right.
I caught it in theater, actually.
What's that?
I caught it in theater, and I had a ball.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Conan the Destroyer, Comedy Conan the Destroyer, is excised from the record. From the record. Yes. Amen.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And I think a lot of the, you know, right now, a lot of the review is just about kind of attacking other critics, really, for all of their complaints of it, you know.
there's a perfectly legitimate place for a movie like that.
I love the one review that was actually written by one of the genre sites, you know, like Joe Blow or Arrow in the Head or one of these guys. And they basically said the movie was like a video game. You could even break it down into individual stages and a final boss.
Probably couldn't argue with that, actually.
That was cool.
That's a bonus,
you know.
So you mix that with badass Marines who don't wet themselves or, you know, or taking orders from Dick Cheney somewhere. Who cares, you know? Have a good time.
Right.
Nice. Well, I look forward to that review. That'd be cool for sure. All right. For me, nothing nearly as exciting. Well, I don't know. Actually, did you guys catch Nicolas Cage's Drive Angry
I did.
I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see it. Yeah.
Now, I don't know. This, Steve, I anticipated you would like this movie, yes?
I you know what? I really enjoyed it.
See, here's my thing with it. Like, on paper, it definitely – it's got – if you were just to put all the elements – because it is over the top and crazy. All the elements down on paper, it's like, wow, this is just a great, great B-movie. But for me, it just seemed like they were trying real hard to make a great, great B-movie. You know, they just felt – a lot of this stuff just kind of felt forced, I suppose. I mean, again, on paper, it sounded cool. It just came across as a little too contrived for me.
I think there were times where Nicolas Cage didn't know what movie he was in.
Absolutely.
He was taking it way too seriously at times, man.
Yeah, he seemed lost, for sure.
By the oil drum fire, and he's just kind of staring there with his legs kind of half spread, and he just, you know, it looks like some scene from, you know, from really some serious, intense, you know, drama.
That's right. Yeah, right. You know, maybe, right. That's, you know, maybe that's that, too. Maybe, you know, that's not a bad point, because there, a lot of it was tonguing. I mean, William Fichtner, who is awesome in that.
Amazing. Absolutely,
you know?
Amazing.
But he brought kind of that tongue-in-cheek aspect to it, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's funny because I haven't even seen the movie, and when you said Nicolas Cage didn't know what movie he was in, I was going to chime in and say, well, he thought he was in a Nicolas Cage movie, and really he was in a William Fichtner movie.
That's probably
I haven't even seen it, but I knew that Fichtner would be awesome.
He is. He is easily the best.
100% awesome.
Yeah. He is. He is
the best part of the movie. And you know, Steve, you may have hit on that. Maybe you hit on that for me. Maybe that's why a lot of it seemed forced and off to me. Because everybody else was like
playing it so straight, so earnest.
Maybe that's what it was like. Like being so serious about this when it obviously wasn't. You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, that might be possible. So. So that's the only thing. But, I mean, it is definitely crazy.
Did you see my proposal for a sequel on Facebook?
I did not.
Well, yes.
out from hell?
There you go. Not bad.
William Fichtner and Nicolas Cage working as a pair of bounty hunters dispatched by Satan, who is actually a well-read, wise, and benevolent prison warden.
That's right. Maybe we'll swap Nicolas Cage out for Nick Offerman.
Yes.
William Fichtner. That'd be just too much to handle. So I kind of, you know, kind of a mixed take on that for me. And then I love all these studios who get a hold of these licenses to release movies on Blu-ray. And we've just been seeing like this deluge of just pointless, like worthless movies being released on Blu-ray that no one could possibly want. I don't think, you know,
right?
Like for me, like so, Children of the Corn 3. Urban. So that landed on my doorstep. You know,
yeah, there's
Blu-ray.
That company that what is it? Echo Bridge or whatever?
Echo Bridge got a whole bunch of licenses.
Yeah, they cut the deal with Miramax and they're releasing all this stuff and it's all in the wrong aspect ratios and it's, you know, pretty, it's and what, stereo got, like.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like two stereo and the transfers are like a degree above DVD, you know, like an up DVD, but yeah, it's stereo mixes. I got this one double feature from Mill Creek. These are some other guys who got a hold of some licenses.
Right.
Galaxina and the Crater Lake Monster. Each of these movies has three stereo tracks. One is DTS, one is Dolby Digital, one is uncompressed PCM. And like the third track on the Crater Lake Monster is actually a track from Galaxina. So like they just mix it up in the editing. So yeah. So these studios are just kind of pumping out these Blu-rays. And Children of the Corn 3 is... I don't know. I mean, really? Do we? I mean, just really? So
funny about this, a lot of this stuff, like, I mean, I know with like Kill Bill 1 and 2 are examples, Sin City, Equilibrium, a lot of the Miramax stuff and a lot of the Dimension Film stuff we've been getting on Blu-ray pretty much since 2006, 2007 from Alliance Atlantis.
Oh, yeah?
Which is a company based out of Atlanta, Canada, but they've got a huge, like they pretty much cornered a market on distribution in Canada. It's only them and Entertainment One, really. And, like, I mean, Lord of the Rings, all of this stuff. But in most cases, we got the discs, like, years, literally. Like, I mean, I bought Equilibrium. Geez, it was one of the maybe third or fourth Blu-rays I bought because I'd found it for $15 at Future Shop or something. And this was, you know, when I first bought my PS3 in 2007. But it has you know, it's 235 or 240 to 1 aspect ratio. It's 5.1, you know, uncompressed audio. Right. So. You know, it's funny, and I mean, like Sin City, I had a theatrical cut of Sin City a year, I think, before the American release came out.
Wow!
Yeah, well, I mean, we are at
Miramax
that point.
Miramax is just existing on fumes, and they're just cutting every deal that they can possibly cut. Because I just read they've licensed Hulu Plus to have all of their movies, basically.
Wow.
So I know I saw Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs out there, and you know, correct aspect ratios, I believe. So I haven't checked them out yet, but I think they have pretty much everything. They're just like anybody who is willing to release their movies.
Nice.
And give them a couple bucks.
They'll take
down. If only they held the license to Sudden Death. You know, we get Children of the Corn Free, yes. But no Sudden Death or 13th Warrior, right? Steve, it's only available in Germany, right? Or the Netherlands.
I don't want Echo Bridge coming near Sudden Death.
That's true. Keep Echo Bridge away from Sudden Death.
13th Warrior should be getting good treatment. That's a Disney flick.
Yeah.
That's true. It's a Touchstone, right? No. It's Hollywood Pictures, I think, or something like that.
Hollywood, one of the two.
One of those two, yeah.
I want it out. I want it in a Blu-ray, DVD, downloadable digital copy, 3-disc set.
That's right.
And I want to be able to get Disney rewards points from the website.
That's right.
And well, I get something.
Well, there's a standing invitation. There's a standing offer out there that Mike Staley put towards the – I think it's Fox or whatever – saying that if they want someone to tape up commentary for Sudden Death, we are available. Yes.
So. And it will be the best possible commentary that you could ever have for something.
Yes, it'll be, wow, that's awesome, over and over.
He just used a chicken bone to stab that guy in the throat.
Yes.
All right, so speaking of releases and Blu-rays and whatnot, let's move on to, gentlemen, I don't know if you have this open, but at DVDverdict.com, our home site, obviously, we're at the release calendar. If you want to take a look at, we typically take a look at the upcoming releases. So I don't know if you guys.
The month of June is going to kill me. Oh my God, the month of June is going to kill me.
Okay, so release calendar, if you guys want to follow on DVD Verdict, and then click on Cover Art Gallery for June 7th. You guys see that? And you kind of take a preview of what's coming out on Tuesday. Get an advanced look. And definitely a lot of.
I got one of my discs today, actually.
All right, what do you see?
My shiny new Blu-ray of True Grit, which for my money was the best film of 2000.
I love True Grit a great deal. I agree. Good stuff.
Still haven't seen it, sadly. Yeah. But that will be remedied shortly.
I probably put it as either number two or number three in the Coen's body of work for me.
You know, I would probably say it was the Coen's movie that I enjoyed the most, you know, from start to finish. I think I just entertained me the most. I just really liked it so much.
As soon as it opened, it's just something about, like, right from the get-go, the music and Hayley Stenfield's her little opening monologue. Like, it's just so dripping with atmosphere that it sucks you in immediately.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even Matt Damon, who I think is annoying most of the time, is great in that movie. So
he was, yeah. He was. He was good.
Let's see. There's that big Superman mega set on Blu-ray. That was actually on our product list this week, and I was tempted, but I said no because really, I don't want to sink as much time as that set would demand just so I could talk about how much Superman 4 sucks. So
I don't think actually it was worth it. The opposite direction. I did request it. I don't know, you know, whether I'll get it or not, but I did, you know, part of my rationale for requesting it, which I did explain to Mike Staley, was how often do you get a chance to write about Nuclear Man?
That's true. Well, I hope whoever gets it, whether it's you, Dan, or someone else, gives Nuclear Man his due.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. He made it clear in the product list that you needed to write a detailed review, and that's a big part of the detail, is giving Nuclear Man his due, because I don't think that the critical community has achieved that yet.
Not yet. We're still waiting. Yep. So I'm hoping that, like these mega sets, they break them up. You know, is there a Superman 4 standalone Blu-ray out there? I know there's like a Superman and a Superman 2. Superman 4 standalone Blu-ray?
I don't think so.
I don't know if I could bring myself to actually outlaying money for that since I have it on DVD already.
I think it's just 1 and 2.
Well, if they have 4 shows up, I'm going to have to... I mean, 3, I get to talk about the stupid skiing on the skyscraper scene, too, so that's what
I'm Yeah, yeah. There's plenty of material there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as far as dropping a steaming deuce on a beloved comic book character, Superman 3 and 4, I mean, Batman and Robin can't come close to what Superman 3 and 4 did to Superman, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, especially 4. I mean,
4, absolutely.
Wow, you know.
Oh, man.
A little kid just basically tells Superman what to do.
That's right.
He goes out, turns into a Nazi. Right.
Yes. Like the fascist he is. He just steals nuclear weapons. All right. We can't get into a Superman 4 digression here. We can't do it.
I've got three other really big ones for Tuesday. And like three see. That I've really been waiting for.
All right, what do you got? Well, let me try to guess, okay? See, I'm gonna go with Lady Football.
Damn, you're See, good.
Yes, the housemaid and
Ex-pupil.
No, the 40 best hot rods ever.
Extreme Booty, Volume 5.
Yes.
No, not at all.
Just go with it.
No, I went with it.
Yeah, I saw that trailer. And I could totally see how that movie was going to play out.
Yeah, pretty much. Right, no, I've got something I've been waiting for forever to actually even just get a half respectable home video treatment. The Man Who Would Be King.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is like one of Houston's last really great movies, you know. I've got, where did he go? He's here somewhere. The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Yeah.
Which
nice, yes.
I've been waiting for forever. Right. You know, I've as soon as I started watching Blu-rays, it's like, man, I really need me some Josie Wales.
Mm.
And, of course, Whitesnake. No, wait. No, what? No, not Whitesnake.
Robin of Sherwood? That looks like a Whitesnake DVD.
No, and the last was the great classic Walter Hill Western, The Long Riders.
Right.
Yeah, yes. Nice.
Which starred, I think, three different Carradines.
A lot of Westerns.
How many Carradines are there?
You know. I mean, maybe there are only three.
Thousands.
Same amount as the Baldwins.
Yeah. They're not all related.
All right, anything else, guys? Anything else jump out at you?
Well, you get the Every Which Way But Loose, Any Which Way You Can double feature on there. That's
Left Turn, Clyde.
Yeah. Redonkulous movies, but entertaining. At least the first one. I don't remember the second one.
I know they made a second one, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I might have seen it and just thought it was the first one. And not
that's possible.
One of those things where you can't tell them apart.
How about Exorcismus?
Well, let's wrap it up as we usually do on this segment. Most inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. So, Steve, you see one that's inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week?
Huh. The cocoa nuts.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
Dan.
I'm going to go with hair.
All right. A very niche market.
Yes, yeah.
I will have to go with the Long Riders. I mean, really.
The Long Riders.
Have to be that. All right, so this is our final segment of the Friday Filibuster, and this is our ambush topics. And the three of us are just – we have one random topic we're going to throw at each other and see if anything works. I'll go first. Obviously, it's big, heavy-duty sports stuff going on, Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, big hockey stuff. We got the NBA Finals, baseball. And I think those three sports probably cover, like, the three favorite sports of the podcasters on the show right now, if I were to guess. Maybe I'm stereotyping Steve, but you are a hockey aficionado, correct, Steve?
I am a hockey man.
Yeah. I figured as much. And I know Dan loves his Cubs, and I'm a Knicks guy. So taking those sports, my challenge to you gentlemen is the worst use of your sport in a TV show or movie or even a part of a TV show or movie. So basically the worst on-screen use of your sport.
Whoa.
Oh, I immediately know.
Okay, go with it.
And mine is controversial too. But I'm going to go.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, because we've already discussed this on Facebook. Field of Dreams.
Oh yeah, very controversial. Just, yes.
Yeah, I just absolutely hate the movie with a passion.
It's a modern American classic.
That's right.
Right. It drops a deuce on baseball. It's treacly and sentimental and lame and it's
pre-apocalyptic
just a bunch of hippies. Yeah,
that is bad. That's very hippie happy. And, that's true.
And Amy Madigan or whatever her name is, Ed Harris's wife, is incredibly grating in the movie, and she gives that speech where she Because, you know, they live in a town where people don't just ban books from school. They actually burn them. So she has to get up and call everybody Nazis and and just be very happy with herself as she does it. I mean, I think it's legitimate to tell people off who are into the into burning books. But, you know, you don't have to be quite so self-satisfied when you do it, I think. And, yeah, it's just I hate every moment of the movie. And Costner's awful in it. His just his line delivery is flat.
He's kind of whiny too.
Yeah, yeah. It's just and Timothy Busfield from 30 something.
That's right.
Whatever is pretty much just a jerk in it, or is painted to be a jerk. Actually, he's a non-jerk because you know he has the very unreasonable attitude that they should sell a failing farm that his brother or brother-in-law is creating a baseball field in for no apparent reason because he can't see the invisible people. And so we're supposed to think he's a bad guy because he thinks that everybody else in the movie who sees the invisible people is crazy. so, yeah, I hate
that. One of the most terrifying endings in all of film, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we see the dawn of the apocalypse at the end of that movie.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't come from a region of the country where we say, have a catch.
Have a catch, yeah. I've never said that.
We play catch where I come from, so, you know, I don't – which is pretty near – isn't the movie set in Iowa?
Supposedly, right?
Yeah, I don't think they say have a catch in Iowa. Because I grew up, you know, fairly close to Iowa, and nobody I – no, ever use that phrase.
All right, it's quite the laundry list. How about you, Steve? Any
I've got to go with the 1986 Rob Lowe, Patrick Swayze classic, Youngblood.
Okay.
Yes, good choice.
A skilled young hockey prospect hoping to attract the attention of professional scouts is pressured to show that he can fight if challenged during his stay in a Canadian minor hockey town. His on-ice activities are complicated by his relationship with the coach's daughter. Oh, my God.
Like, very nice.
They automatically assume that, you know, okay, you're a great skater and shooter and you're a playmaker, but you must fight. You have to fight if it's hockey, because we all know that hockey is basically one step removed from UFC.
Of course, yes.
You know, like, they don't call it a rink. They call it the octagon, you know? Like, seriously, really. You'll never be a good player if you don't fight.
It's like Thunderdome, man.
That's right. There's so many brawls.
And when I think hockey, if I were a casting director and somebody said, I got to cast a hockey movie, Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze would be the first actors I would think of.
That's right.
They look so much like hockey.
Absolutely.
Because they're both so effeminate.
That's right.
Because all hockey players are effeminate.
That's right.
Especially in 1986.
Right.
Well, for me, you know, basketball is an interesting one because I think it is overwhelmingly poorly represented. And I think there's like one decent basketball movie, and that happens to be Hoosiers, which is one of my movies, you know. But beyond
like
that,
the worst coach in basketball history,
Norman Dale.
Well, in Hoosiers he was.
In Hoosiers, that's right. But I mean, that's like everything else is just it's pretty terrible. Whether it's, you know, White and Jump. Or Six Man with the Wayans brothers, where like one of them is dead or something. I mean, just so much terrible stuff. So much terrible
Space
stuff.
Space Jam.
Space Jam, terrible. But Above the Rim with Tupac.
Oh.
Terrible. So everything, so much is terrible because a lot of the times they cast people who don't know how to play basketball, you know? So it's just, and that is like, that's a tough sport to fake.
You telling me that Woody Harrelson don't got game?
He's got a little bit of game. But I can't quite buy him hustling everyone in the projects, if you know what I mean, you know?
I hear you.
Like with hockey, you know, you could pull back a little bit. You got stunt guys in there. You know, you could be a little creative. The close-ups give you trouble, but, you know.
They're all wearing face masks. It's okay.
That's right. They're all wearing face masks. Baseball, some creative editing. But you know when someone's shooting a basketball if they've never been around a basketball before in their life, you know? But so much crap to choose from. I'm going to go for three moments, three of my favorite basketball bastardization moments in cheesy TV, okay? One is Family Matters.
Okay.
Urkel is on the basketball team, and he keeps telling the coach that he's good. He's good at basketball. And he finally gets a chance to play because one of the guys gets injured. And guess what?
He sucks.
He's good. And true or false, does he make the game-winning basketball hoop in slow motion?
Oh, yes. True.
True.
Of course.
So that's terrible. And then in Full House, there was an episode where
there was a
3-on-3 charity tournament.
We're breaking out the Lorimer Hall of Shame here now.
Absolutely, yeah. Refed by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Jesse was – he sucks at basketball. He just doesn't know what to do. But he learns to shoot from his sweet spot. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar shows him how to shoot. But it's – so whatever.
That sounds so dirty.
He's so terrible. Yeah. But like what's funny about that is – you know, it's like this lame 3-on-3 tournament as a fundraiser to watch Bob Saget and Dave Coulier playing basketball. And it's got, like, people packed it out to watch it, you know? Like, I'll spend $50 and give you a $1,000 corporate sponsorship to watch this terrible basketball. And it's my favorite.
Did they have, like, the sweatbands?
Yes.
the big fuzzy headbands?
Trust me, Bob Saget has never been around.
Oh, my God.
Obvious. But my favorite has to go to the teen comedy that aired on NBC right after Saved by the Bell called Hang Time. Have you heard of this show? Is this familiar to anyone? Hang Time.
No.
It's about a high school basketball team, but a girl is on the boys' basketball team. So that's the twist, you know? So it's about basketball. But it's,
wow, that's intriguing.
It's very
so Hang Time some sort of euphemism? Or, yeah, locker room euphemism or what?
Trust me, the show wasn't nearly as clever or subversive. it was a show that revolved around basketball. Like, most of the kids obviously didn't know what they were doing. The court was the size of probably your bathroom, you know, so it was just the hoop was about 8 feet tall. Just a terrible, you know, again, steaming deuce on the sport. So
hey, but, you know, you did have the white shadow. So your sport at least had one good show.
Okay,
you know, all baseball's ever had is maybe some Snoopy episodes.
Yeah. Hockey's had the cutting edge. Oh, wait.
Oh, yes. I didn't bring up the cutting edge for a reason.
Well, we had Slapshot, though. Slapshot.
Slapshot, legend. Yeah. And hey, I think Miracle's a pretty good hockey movie. A pretty good sport.
Actually, you know, Miracle is great, and Mystery Alaska was freaking awesome, too.
Yeah, you know, I heard good things about it. So, in conclusion, even though North American sports market is dominated by basketball and baseball and obviously football, hockey, true or false, hockey has output better movies.
True.
Mighty Ducks even as a kids movie, right? Not
sure,
bad.
Sure. You know, it's an Emilio Estevez headlined rated G version of the Bad News Bears, but hey.
Yeah.
That's right. It's got Emilio Estevez.
Well, see, baseball did have the Bad News Bears.
This is true.
That's good. Well, my theory's a little blown.
The movie that taught me how to curse.
I blame Police Academy and DC Cab.
Okay, before we talk about DC Cab, let's move on. So, Steve, what do you have?
Okay, this one sort of ties into Dan's Field of Dreams.
Nice.
Tirade, I think. Absolute worst portrayals of mental illness.
Oh, man.
Television or film.
Oh, man.
I told you it might be
tough. How come Sean Penn just jumped in my head for some reason?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, let's see here. Oh, man. That's a good one, Steve. That is a good one.
I watched a bit of Tropic Thunder the other day.
I know, absolutely. I just think that is absolutely applicable. Oh, man. All right. I'm going to put some thought into this here. Like, just embarrassing, cringeworthy stuff, you know?
Yeah, you know, like schizophrenia is not like that.
Well, you know, I'm watching some Saved by the Bell reruns, and I know Screech isn't supposed to be functionally handicapped, you know, but obviously he is, so that doesn't count. I gotta keep.
He was from before they had a term called Asperger's.
That's right.
Yes.
All right, let me see. Danny, you think of anything off the top of your head?
I had one, and then you mentioned Screech, and it immediately flew out of my head. I'm gonna go Brad Pitt in 12 Monkeys. It's probably not the worst I've ever seen, but off the top of my head, it's not a horrible performance, but in terms of
portraying a mental illness,
bit it's a little bit acting crafty for schizophrenia, you know. I didn't really buy him as a schizophrenic. I bought him as somebody in an acting class performing schizophrenia.
Gotcha, yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, I've not seen this movie. So I'm going to go on the record now. I've not seen this movie. I only remember the trailer. It just looked so terrible to me. But I'm going to go with Jodie Foster as Nell.
Oh. Yeah. I think I have seen
it. Okay, I haven't even seen it. But the trailer was so terrible to me and so awful and so cheesy and syrupy. Oh, unbelievable. So I'm going to go with Jodie Foster's Nell, Sight Unseen. I didn't have to see it to know how terrible it was.
I had one when I thought of the idea, and it's gone.
Okay. How about Cuba Gooding Jr.'s Radio?
That was a good one. I was thinking about something originally when it, because you were what movie? Oh crap! When you had asked me about an ambush topic, I had just finished thinking about this one particular movie and how stupid it was.
Oof.
Oh, here we go. Girl Interrupted.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
Because we all know that insane asylums are, you know, as portrayed in that movie.
That's right.
It was basically, I know it's supposed to be based on a memoir written by someone who went through the institutions and all this kind of stuff, but I wonder how much of the film was actually, you know, taken from her memoirs. And if that is the case, how delusional this person actually was. Like, you know, Angelina Jolie's character in that movie.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, like, I don't see this as being, you know, a genuinely accurate portrayal of, you know, the general climate of a mental institution in the United States in the late 20th or early 21st century. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm desperately trying to think of Saved by the Bell did a very special episode about, you know, they did one about a girl in a wheelchair, but it wasn't a mental illness, so that was hugely offensive.
That's like your fallback is Saved by the Bell.
There's so much. That was hugely offensive. I mean, if it was a physical handicap, like I work at an agency, you know, that helps people with disabilities, and we've done a couple presentations about, you know, how do you interact with someone with a disability, you know, what not to do. And I've actually run clips from that Saved by the episode where Zach, don't do what Zach Morris does here. That's how bad it was. Okay.
Okay, how about say, I am Sam? I mean,
couldn't bring myself, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Oscar dumpster diving, right?
Is that or Rain Man.
See, Rain Man's become just like a parody now, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you watch Rain Man now, it just becomes like this pop culture parody, so. All right, so wrapping us up, Dan, what do you have to finish this off?
All right, and I actually did, because we've kind of touched on this topic, but I actually did write this down or typed it up in Notepad when you pinged me on Skype saying, do you have an ambush topic? And I said, no, because I did as much show prep for Friday Filibuster as I do for Objection. So of course I don't have
none.
Right, so of course I don't have an ambush topic. But it is Badass Strangers in a Strange Land.
Ooh.
Okay. And, you know, we did talk about, you know, I guess we talked about Pathfinder, which I think would fall into that category. And that's actually what brought it up. I was watching that earlier today from Netflix. And so that's always a fun movie genre to me, is when somebody ends up in a foreign place.
Right.
And then just kicks ass.
That's right. All right. Really, I'm definitely going to avoid a Jim Cotter reference here, though. I will definitely. I mean, does it get it?
But, I think that qualifies.
I mean, really, though. I think maybe it's perfect. I'm going to have to go with it, I guess, Dan, because does it get any stranger than Parmistan?
No. It definitely does not get any stranger than Crazy Town.
Crazy Town. Yes. Okay. Two birds with one stone here, okay? Well, A, your ambush topic, Parmistan, and then Steve. Representation of mental illness. All the villagers in the town. That's right. So this is
especially that lady who screams from the balcony.
Yeah. That's right. If only Kurt Thomas shot some baskets, I would have been complete with all three. It would be ambush topic trifecta, you know? It would have been the hat trick. But yeah, definitely. Okay, I'm going to go with Jim Cotter because obviously it doesn't get stranger than Parmistan, you know? And he does say what you want. Jonathan Gabbett kicks some serious ass.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can ask the question, if you want to get technical, where is Parmistan? But the real question is, why is Parmistan?
That's right. Oh, no. We don't – geographically, we're not sure. We just know it's the perfect place to put an early warning ICBM station, right? So
right.
That's – or a Star – I think it was a Star Wars station, I believe. Capitalizing on
based on real events. I mean, I think it was actually maybe like Bulgaria or something.
Romania.
Or Poland.
Look,
but I think Ronald Reagan did send somebody to somewhere in Eastern Europe to participate in a death hunt style game in order to be able to play Star Wars. You know?
Little known fact, Gymkhana is actually based on a book, you know. It's based on a book called The Terrible Game. That's all I know from the credits. I don't know if you can find
it. I'm willing to bet that the pommel horse stuff was built into it after.
I'm guessing they kind of shaped that book around the particular sport star that they had. You're correct. But So, Stranger in a Strange Land, Jonathan Cabot in Parmistan.
I'm trying to imagine the experience of reading Gymkhana.
That's
the kind of reading that could make you stupider.
Remember that internal skull bleeding we talked about earlier?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that would actually lead to authentic mental illness, I think.
Realistic portrayal of mental illness.
That would be extremely realistic. Though I do think Thorg probably had a chromosome or two extra, I think, in that movie, right?
Yeah.
Oh, look, The Terrible Game is – okay, pro tip. The Terrible Game is available on Amazon, used from $73.
You Gymkhana fans are absolutely free, just crazy.
Okay,
$73.
There's you could spend up to $120 for this.
Is it signed?
It doesn't look like you have to. If you look at it, I mean, there's a Roman centurion on the cover, so I'm thinking they took a lot of liberties.
Yeah,
I love this. Like, okay, Terrible Game. You know, $74. Customers who bought this also bought Gymkhana for $6.99.
Yeah, yeah. So you just wait. When Gymkhana goes out of print, it's going to be worth like $1,000.
Or you know, it's a terrible game. $6.99.
Yeah, or at least $6.99.
Well, listen to this. This is kind of interesting here. So some guy did a little plot summary. In Russia, there's a small plateau populated by a warrior race. A very narrow path leads up to the country. Any visitor must play the terrible game and survive before they can interact with the locals. The game involves multiple contests of horsemanship, archery, wrestling, and swordsmanship. In 500 years, none have survived. The hero's on a mission to establish diplomatic relations. It's not very far off.
All right.
I said so myself.
Yeah, and
other than the whole gymnastics.
Although, right. Here's the third review.
Pommel horses.
Third review.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. Going based only on the movie made from this book, Gymkhana, I would have to say this is completely unacceptable reading.
I wonder if there's a scene in the book where the hero climbs a flight of stairs on his hands.
That's right. And maybe the narrative says... You know, the narrative somehow sets up the scene. We were looking directly down that guy's underwear, you know.
Right, right.
Great.
His 80s short shorts.
Short shorts, yes.
His shorts were no longer and maybe slightly shorter than the shorts worn by Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed during their beach training run.
Absolutely. they were almost wearing them internally. That's how short,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All right, well. Yeah, Gymkhana, dangerous digression topic. So, Steve, did you have Stranger in a Strange Land?
Well, I kind of wanted to use sort of the Stranger because I just love that movie so much. But I ultimately got to go with Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
Nice.
Very good. Very good.
Very good choice.
I mean, badass. It doesn't get any more badass than Jack Burton. And Strange Land, it doesn't get any stranger than San Francisco Chinatown.
That's right. Oh, man. Yeah,
fantastic. Movie hero, fantastic movie.
Now, let me ask you that. Is that a movie that appeals to women, you think? My wife thinks it's the stupidest crap she's ever seen in her life.
Definitely not.
My wife thinks it's the stupidest crap she's ever – I will guarantee that she likes Psycho Kickboxer more than Big Trouble.
She likes Shredder. You remember Shredder? About the serial killer on the ski slopes?
I think I would have to go to Flash Gordon to find a movie that my wife would hate more than
she hates that. You're right. She thinks it's incredibly dumb too. Yes.
I used to kind of gauge relationships when I was dating a lot. I used to gauge it on their like of both Raiders of the Lost Ark and Big Trouble in Little China. Nice. And the fact that my current wife didn't completely dismiss Big Trouble in Little China, that was a strong argument in her favor.
That's right. That's boy. So Dan, you're looking down the barrel of two great examples. So what is your?
Yeah, I know, and all I had was Pathfinder.
Come on now.
Here's your chance for redemption.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so many fantastic options. I am going to go. I'm going to go with Flash Gordon. You know,
Very good. the Sam S. Jones Queen 1980 Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. He's kind of more of a dumbass than a badass.
But, he is a dumbass.
He does get the job done. He does throw a dude on the spikes. He does impale Bing accidentally, but you know, still he gets it done.
But he does.
He is dumb as a rock.
He throws the guy in spikes right after delivering a monologue about peace and
working together. Right.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't realize that he can shove Ming right off the edge of the platform to his death and
solve
the whole problem.
Might be the easier way to save his planet. You know.
Right.
It also has 100% more Brian Blessed than 90% of every other movie in existence.
That's right. Yes, yeah. Dive!
Flash!
It's got Timothy Dalton sporting the porn star mustache. And
which is always great.
With his Green Lantern gauntlets, you know.
I would have thought that Dan would have went with that movie about the Warriors. You know, there were like 13 of them or whatever.
That's right, 13th Warrior.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's another good one.
But we've just rattled off four movies that I need to go watch right now. I need to stop recording and like just go on a bender where I watch Flash Gordon, 13th Warrior, Big Trouble in Little China, and Gymkhana all together.
Then you might as well throw in Psycho Kickboxer.
Psycho Kickboxer. And that episode from Full House with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would be the
And then after that, you'll be admitted.
That's right. That's true. All right, well... I think that does it. That's a good lively hour or so, and the wind's pretty strong out there. So before a telephone pole comes rifling through my window and impaling me, I guess we'll wrap this up. So Dan and Steve, thanks for jumping on board on short notice. Absolutely. Appreciate it.
It's been a hoot.
It has been a lot of fun, gentlemen. And Friday Filibuster DVDverdict.com is the email address, and feel free to purchase anything. Anything that we talked about on the upcoming DVD release and support the site. So, and listen to Blast Processing and Objection. And speaking of Objection, Dan, I guess there's only one way to close this show.
Thanks, 10 points easy.